Turuntuset tulee Joonael.
Our main topic today is about employer branding from inside out. We have talked several times about employer branding in our marketing radio. And Linus, the question for you is that what are the recent trends in employer branding?
Well, employer branding is becoming a mature thing to work with. It started as an HR, more HR-oriented issue like 15 years ago, and was very not connected with the internal life of the organizations, and mainly focusing on relationships with students and maybe the external marketing of the workplace. But I'd say that the trend now is becoming mature, and it's becoming more strategic, and also connecting the external and the internal sides of it.
If you say that it's more strategic, does it mean that top management is more involved into the discussions and decisions, or are there any other special strategies that that you see happening in the market?
Yeah, because top management, top management has been talking about the employees as the most important resource for a long time, but they haven't really taken the consequences of it. But since companies are becoming more and more dependent, they are depending on the employees. For example, social media, when it comes to marketing, like the marketing department, they can't buy the advertising in the same style as they did 5 or 10 years ago. They need the employees to be engaged and ambassadors for the workplace. And also, since at the trend is with more slimmed organizations, you depend more on the employees that you have. So I'd say, yes, top management is becoming more aware of this. But this is also a trend that the people working with employer branding internally have become more better in marketing the employer brand concept to top management. So that's also when it was strictly an HR thing, it was more difficult to connect it with, for example, performance. Because if you talk about attracting and recruiting and retaining people, that's not the main concern of the top management. They want performance. They want people that deliver. So if you shift the way you talk about employer branding and the effects of employer branding, then you get more attention, top management attention.
I wanted to ask, can you give some good examples about the companies who do it really well, who do see them as the best employers in their industry, and who really work hard to have to achieve the position?
Yes, there are several good examples of both global and Swedish companies. I worked lots, for example, with Atlas Copco previously, which is a company that all companies have different starting points, because some have very, very well known consumer brands, and then you can rely on that. For example, Adidas in Sweden, if they want to hire people, lots of people want to work for Adidas. But then you have to fill it with something more than the consumer brand, because you don't want to work in a consumer brand, you want to work in a workplace. So, but back to the good example, for example, Atlas Copco, there's a global company started in Sweden, but with a strong culture. And I think the most successful, it's not all solely, but it's not about getting your employee brand known for being can you cut that?
Yeah, I understand. Just go on. It's interesting.
Yeah. Can go back to good examples. I think that there are some, often when you see the best employee branding companies, it's the companies that are well known. They get on top of the lists where students want to work. In Sweden, it's IKEA, it's Google and stuff. But I wouldn't say that these are the companies that are actually the best in working with employer branding, because the most successful ones are the more quiet ones, also connecting with the right employees. You don't want to be famous for and wanted by everyone. You want to be wanted by the right people. So I see employer branding as a filter too. It's not only a magnet to attract people, it's also a way to filter the people that will not fit into the organization. So we worked with public agencies in Sweden that are very successful in attracting in difficult markets. As I said, IKEA and Google, they have no problem attracting people, and they are very successful in the way that they have a consumer brand connecting with the employer brand. IKEA have a problem that they attract too many people, because in the end, not everyone fits into IKEA, yeah, because it's a very special culture. So they everyone wants to work there, but when you show up 9 in the morning the first day at work, not everyone that thought they wanted to work there will actually fit in. So I'd say that there are some successful companies that sort of...
But Linus, can you tell what are the concrete tools the more quiet companies, as you call, actually do? What do they do concretely?
What do they do differently? They start within. So if you see, the basic process is to ask the top management, okay, what will we do in 1 year, in 2 years, in 5 years from now? What kind of business will we have? All organization have some sort of business and some sort of customers, or it can be public or private, but they all have. And if you know that, then you can define the target group that you need, the kind of people you need to fulfill these targets, these goals, these business goals. And that's the starting point where you really define, okay, what kind of people do we need? Instead of getting, as I said, you don't want to be attractive to everyone. You want to be sort of the employer of choice for your target group. And then if you continue with sort of the internal, getting the EVP and the offer in place, finding what really drives your employees, that's the key to the first... I want to be more specific. I actually want to... Because all these questions, they are sort of connected. If you ask for successful companies,
yeah, absolutely.
Shall we take that question again?
Yeah, we can take.
take the question again, so you don't have to edit.
Okay. So my next question is, what do the so-called silent companies do differently to attract the talent and to keep them? What are the concrete things they do?
Well, when I said what I meant with silence is more that some companies are very sort of visible. You see them, IKEA, Google, these companies that there are well-known consumer brands, and lots of students and people think that they want to work there, and they sort of end up very high in the ranking lists and so on. But then we have the companies that work more silent, in the way that they attract the people that they really need, and they sort of target their target groups in a more efficient and smarter way. Because the example with the IKEA, they are too popular, because not everyone that think that they want to work there will actually find themselves comfortable within the company, because they have a strong culture that is including but also excluding. So what I think the successful companies are true, they start within. They see what kind of people do we need to fulfill our business goals, and what can we offer them, and sort of really form a strategy that works for them within this area.
Linus, I have a question. In Estonia, we certainly understand today all this employer branding issues as a important important thing to start talking again and again about payment, about salary. Now, my question to you, as you have worked with different companies, is actually, are those companies which are really more magnetic and as you said, people are really eager to go to work there, do they really concentrate on salaries, or do they pay more, or actually this kind of subject is not at all important?
I'd say that focusing on salary and money sort of rewards is a dangerous way to go, because that's not then you're not unique. The only thing that is really unique within a company is the company culture. So if you create a culture, then you can pay less for the same people, because
do they pay less? Does IKEA pay less?
Yes, they do. But some of the companies, IKEA for example, they don't have any good high salaries. It's they are not competing with the salaries, and many companies try to avoid that, because it's better to create sort of the strong culture, the sort of lifestyle. It's more difficult. It's easy to leave a job, but it's difficult to leave a lifestyle. So if you feel that you fit into an organization, then the retention rate will be much higher. So I'd say that it's a bad strategy in employer branding to focus on pay, because the only thing that happens within an industry is to get a sort of higher salaries without, and people move around within in the industry, for example.
It's
if I understand.
Yeah.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. It just reminds me we had a small campaign about asking people to praise the company where they work or the employer, and then I tried to make some kind of statistics about what do people spontaneously mention if someone asks you why do you like your company, and it was so that in the first it was a good team, then it was development, then it was flexible, then it was about friendly, caring, humble, part of the family, and then after that payment or bonuses or anything kind of the monetary rewards were mentioned. So it's of course in Estonia there is a lot of discussion about payment, but in employer branding context, I do agree, Linus, with you that it's really a kind of dangerous area to go in and to start to compete who pays more.
But because you don't get the people will not be faithful to you. Because if someone pays more, they will just move on, and I think it's better to focus, as I said, on the culture and the thing that others can't sort of copy. You can't copy a company culture, but you can copy every compensation and benefit offer that anyone else has. You can give it, and also like in Sweden, we have the unions, and there are agreements in the labor market that you cannot even pay more, even if you wanted. So it's very regulated in some areas, and then in the end you need to compete with and when people leave companies in exit interviews, it's always the excuse, oh, I got a higher salary, but the real that's seldom the real reason for people leaving companies. It's more a bad management or bad leadership than actually getting more money. But of course this differs. There are some professions where money is very important, but there are not the majority, I'd say.
Linus, could you bring us an example about one issue that really is important according to researches to employees that they actually will look like or actually look for in those companies, what is important for them, and from other side, what the companies have built up to come and fulfill this need?
Yeah, I'll say again, it's about culture, feeling that you belong to something. That
bring
you
on us example. What is the one interesting thing in this culture that employees are interested and the companies are willing to give?
It's like, well, depending on the area of what you work with, if you want to sort of change, if you work in the public sector, if you the city of Stockholm or the city, they want to you want to be part of an organization that helps people to a better life, for example, or all the citizens of the city, or if you want to as I mentioned, IKEA, they have a very strong company culture where you you belong, they call it a family. You belong to a family, you have goals where you want to better the life for all the customers. So it's about the purpose for the organization. If you want to, so the answer is that all companies, if you want specific cultures, I don't know, I'm just trying to find the examples of companies that exist both in Estonia and Sweden and other countries.
No, so you can take whatever company. Yes.
Because I mentioned, for example, Atlas Copco, which is a global engineering company. The engineers, they want to work with Atlas Copco, not for the pay, not for the workplace, because they assume that it's a good place to work. They want to work there because they can work with the machines, with the projects, with creating the machines that builds the tunnels in Switzerland under the mountains and the products. They want to be part of the company that creates these magnificent products and the technical solutions. So that's engineers. Engineers work. They look for projects that they sort of.
For them, the importance of this work is important. I understand.
Yeah, the work, the thing that they actually do. Because, as I said, if you want to compete with Atlas Copco or all the other ABB or the companies that attract engineers, that kind of engineers, then they assume everything that comes, sort of salaries, pensions, and that they just assume that is in place. Because if you don't have the basic foundation of that, you can't even compete in the market. But they don't expect the higher salaries, because just a reflection of what you mentioned with the salaries. In all the surveys I've seen, salaries always, like as you said, the 7th, the 9th, 10th place. And it's the important thing with the salary is that it's okay, it's good. It's not something that you have to be ashamed of in front of your old colleagues or something. It's okay, but it's the other things, as I said, for engineers, you work with projects. If you work with people in an hospital, for example, that we work with, okay, they want to work with the patients, they want to help the patients, and that's sort of the trigger. For them, it's the same thing as the technology for the engineers. If you work...
Linus, but if you're a hamburger chain and you're selling hamburgers and it's difficult, it's tough, nobody's interested to do it. What is interesting there? What will be the benefits, the culture?
Well, the culture is, if you, for one, for example, McDonald's in Sweden has a reputation of being a good place to have a good thing to have in your CV. Because if you say, if you're 20 years old and you worked at McDonald's, you know, as an employee, if you want to employ that person, you know that this person can fit into processes, it can work in a team, it can adapt to a certain sort of way of working in a structured way. So McDonald's have two employer brand offers, as I see it. One for young people that come in and work in sort of they make hamburgers and they get a job, and it's a very easy entry job. But then some of those continue and go all the way internally and become managers and so on. Then they have other driving forces for that. But they have as I said, again, it's a job. But also we have to be that classic question: what would you do if you didn't need the money? would you do this? is this job so? And would your priorities be different? So I'd say that some jobs, for example, McDonald's, okay, maybe you wouldn't do that job, but it's being a job. You get the salary, you fit into a process. You get, as I see it, also in some hamburger restaurants, you have a good culture, a culture, and the people that you work with, which is something that also comes back, especially in these kind of sort of more monotone jobs where you. In the industries or in factories, on sort of where you just where you don't get that the engineers get sort of the self fulfillment of creating advanced things. It's just more of a routine job. But then you have the colleagues and the people that you work with, that is an important factor.
But Linus, How can the small local companies compete with the international ones? I understand Atlas Copco is really huge, really challenging. Most of the engineers want to work there. But if I'm a small company in the rural area, also doing some kind of solutions for machines, need engineers, how can I compete with the big ones?
What you can do is that you can... The problem that big companies have, that they have one sort of culture that they think will fit in all the different markets that they're on. If you're a local company, then you can be... What I do as a small company, that I take my 10 best employees, the people that you want to clone, that you don't want to lose, or that you would hire more people of the same, exactly same sort of type, and ask them, what is the fun things with this job? What shall we sort of adjust? Is there something that has to be so sort of changed in this workplace to better it? So the small company has more flexibility, and often smaller companies has a leader, a founder of the company that creates the culture for good and for bad. But the culture in small companies is easier to create a good culture. That's why I mentioned Atlas Copco as a good example of a big company that has they have created the culture of a small company. Because often, and you see this in the transition from a small company to a big company, when the company becomes too big, they lose the original culture, and then it becomes more as sort of anonymous, especially when you change the CEO, for example, and the original entrepreneur goes out, and then you get an outside CEO. So I'd say that you can be more flexible, and you can be, if you listen to your people, you can make changes, you can create the workplace. You can make changes in the workplace in an easier way, and also work with the culture in an easier way. But it's about attitude, I think. The problem that we've had in Sweden, I don't know how it is in Estonia, is that people, sort of management, take people for granted, especially in the kind of professions where there are sort of abundancy, where there are lots of people unemployed, for example. Then you see, okay, I can always get another one. Then you don't focus on the employees. But I don't know if that's
We have seen it here as well,
because we have unemployment and shortage at the same time in different professions, in different areas, in different, so we have to balance that and I don't know if that was the answer to your questions about what small companies can do.
Yeah, of course it was. It was.
Linus, I have one important question to you. If you're working for a company that does also big, huge things, but not for people, for their health, but opposite, for example, Philip Morris, what is the kind of culture you have to build there to keep people, to introduce and bring in more people, to say that Philip Morris is the best place to work?
Actually, I know people that work for Philip Morris, so that's what they did. They created the golden cage. It's a wonderful, very highly professional people. They get lots of sort of development and things, and they work with very advanced. You get lots of responsibility and so on. So I think that they also have the money to do that often, because they can spend that extra the extra money and really create the golden cage for their employees. And also,
what is this golden cage?
The golden cage. It's about
culture.
Well, development, lots of. Personal
just money you get in the future,
not money, actually. But in Sweden, you got cigarettes when you worked for Philip Morris. That was a problem for people that didn't smoke, because you got the cigarettes either you wanted or not.
Yeah.
But no, it's more about development and traveling and sort of working projects in Switzerland, for example, and doing this kind of sort of extra things. And the personal development, educational courses, things that you can go, that costs money. So it's not about I can't really answer if Philip Morris have, I don't know if they have high salaries or not, but it's we've seen that problem in Sweden, that tobacco, weapons, there are some also gaming in some sort. People don't, they have a little problem with the sort of image. And people, since the professional and private life is mixing up, you have to be proud of your employer. You can't say, oh no, I work for, you know, you have to be proud because otherwise you will, yes.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask also, there is a kind of buzzword that is employer value proposition. My question is, is it really a buzzword, or is there any content that companies should really follow?
Yes, I think. But if we leave aside the employee value proposition, the word, what it really means is, if you, when you want to market a job, a single job or an entire workplace, what do you say? If you, everyone that works with recruiting knows that if you see a manager and you ask this manager, why should someone seek this job? And then they get a long list of good things with the job. Ah, you get the things, the sort of the tasks, you get the colleagues, you get, and it's a long list. But the problem is, when you communicate, you can't sort of communicate everything. And since some of these things that the manager think is very interesting for everyone, actually it's not, because the people that apply for the job, they, as I mentioned, the engineers at Atlas Copco, you can't even talk about salaries the first thing you do, because first you have to talk about the technology. And then if they get hooked with the technology, then you can introduce the other things. But they take these. So the concept of EVP is basically getting a unique thing to say that is also attractive for the people, because it has to, this long list of things that you want to communicate. Look at any recruitment ad online or in the print. They say lots of things, too many things, because they don't know what to focus on. So the process of creating the EVP is to see what is true, the things that you really can offer. Because what's true, so if you go to the job, what will you get? Oh, you will get the computer and the colleagues and the true things. Then you ask your target or group, what do they think about, what's attractive to them? And that's the trick question, because if you talk to a manager or someone that has been in the company for 10 years, they have no idea what is really attractive to the outside groups or even to the young employees. So that's the key sort of to the EVP, to find out what the target groups finds interesting. And then of course, the third thing that you look to look at in the EVP process is what's unique. What do the competitors offer? And again, if you look at recruitment ads, you see companies writing things in the ad that any company within the sector will offer. So why do you even mention that? It's like saying, oh, you get, I don't know, a chair. Okay, I get that anywhere in an office. So it's about finding the unique things that is attractive. So that's it's not a buzzword, but I, as all these words, especially the English words, maybe it's the same in Estonia and in, yes, Sweden, people say, oh, what's that, sort of another acronym or blah, blah. So what I do is to find, we use the Swedish words, we explain it. Well, it's a unique offer. It's like you don't buy a car or an iPhone or you just because it's a phone or
it's something special. Then
Comment marketing.
Yeah. I also ask that, as you told at the beginning, that employer branding is already kind of maturing concept in Swedish market. Then in Estonian, we have to say that it's something that is really novel, that the market is just starting to grow, as I think, if I talk at these terms. There are companies trying to understand how to do the employer branding, how to look from inside out. Mostly the Scandinavian originated companies who are the driving forces in the market, and all the others are just trying to understand what it's about. Should we take it seriously? Should we not? And the question is, if I want to start from somewhere, let's say that I have a company, maybe 10 or 20 employees, I have never paid attention to doing something special for my employees. But maybe, okay, we have some kind of events together that is very popular in Estonia. Maybe they have a bit longer vacation. Maybe they, I don't know, can have company car for their personal use or something, but nothing really special. What should I do? What should be the first steps?
I think that's just the first thing you mentioned, that you are starting up this kind of the employee branding work within that it's not only the global, the international companies, but also in Estonian companies. I think it's a good thing because then you can avoid some of the mistakes that have been made in Sweden. But
hopefully.
Of course, yeah, I think that really, because I can see that now, that what I would focus on is the performance of the employees and to look into, okay, because it's employee branding is very strongly connected with the recruitment planning. And the strategy for recruitment. If you see, okay, if I have 30 employees, if I see five of these sell more, produce more, are better workers, what is it that single them out? Why are they that way? Can we get more of those? That's what, because if you have 30 people, I'd say that some of these will not contribute at all, and some contribute three times more than the other, the normal one. So I'd start a discussion of employer branding, because employer branding is the communication that supports the competence supply in the company. So it's, you need to start asking yourself, I'd sit down with the CEO or the manager of the company and ask, okay, what different do the people make in this company? What do you need your employees for? What do they do? Do they sell? Do they produce things? Are you a factory? Okay, what's the problem in the factory? We worked with a kitchen factory, for example. Their problem was that they didn't have the quality that they needed in the production of the kitchens. So what, in the end, they ended up at their consumers with faults, with problems in the products. And that costed a lot of money. So they started, and that's what I meant with, because employee branding in Sweden started as an external thing, sort of with students and recruitment, but it's more this inside-out thing and really taking into the consideration the performance aspect, because that's also where you will sort of earn real money from it. Of course, you can pay less for recruitment because you have a strong employer brand, but if you have really engaged people, the right people. So I don't know. It depends also if you see on the recruitment strategy and an employee brand strategy, they are sort of fit. They should be very tightly united.
Okay, so it means that I have to look at my best people and try to clone them, and try to find the things how to attract the similar ones into my company and how to keep them. This is the first step.
Yeah, I see. And so then you focus. You start with top management, sort of, and look at the how can the people contribute to the business, and then you start. Then the employee brand process, it's about communication and trying to communicate externally and internally. So it's a marketing, but it's the same thing as I often. It's a good thing to make a comparison with how you market your products and customers, because employee branding is, and recruitment is, the same thing as selling products, but you sell the workplace. So you need to find out what kind of customers you want, and you need to have a product that you sell, the workplace in this case. So, but it's lots of things to be done, but the key question is, okay, the employees, so you have the right employees, because all employees will not, every company has their own needs of different kind of people. And that you really see that the people makes the difference. If you don't have that talent perspective, then it's difficult to work with employer branding. So that's if someone works with has the responsibility of working with employer branding, I'd give them that, try to get management attention and talk about it in sort of the more this how it supports the business.
Absolutely. And my final question is that we have talked here several times or mentioned about the costs and the decreasing cost. And the question is, do you have a case or example to give about a company or an organization that that has measured the decrease of cost compared to the time without kind of special attention to employer branding, and then probably, I don't know, 5 to 10 years time when the employer branding has really been in focus? What kind of structural cost changes the companies can face?
You have different key performance indicators for how you earn money from or gain money from employer branding. The first, of course, is that you get more, it's easier to get people to apply for jobs. You don't need to spend the money on. And I'd say that all companies that I've worked with have sort of made that kind of measurements. You see, okay, how do we, from, for example, from the time that you have a vacancy, how long does it take to fill the position? That's sort of and as I said, you can earn money from the point of view that you don't have to spend on recruitment, advertising, on external recruitment agencies, for example.
Okay.
And we work with the Swedish Armed Forces now, for example, and they're looking very much on turnover, because they see the external communication gives a promise, and if they don't fulfill that promise internally, people leave. So the people turnover in the first 8 or 10 months, that's a key performance indicator for them, because they lose, it costs very much. It's a lot of costs involved in losing people after a couple of months, because then they got the training. So that's just an example of an organization that looks into, because then you, if you have a high turnover in the early stage of an employee, then it's a sign of that there's something not right with the promise external and the fulfillment internally, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that, and we go on to our next topic.